Welcome to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, the podcast where we uncover the secrets of CEOs, entrepreneurs, and visionaries who've used public speaking to skyrocket their businesses and their bottom line. Get ready for captivating stories, valuable insights, and practical wisdom from the trailblazers who've mastered the art of the stage. I'm your host, Kelly O'Hara, and I'm thrilled to bring their experiences and expertise directly to you. Let's get started. Welcome back to another episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, where we dip headlong into the minds of those who dominate the stage and the boardroom. Today, we're cracking up the intensity with a conversation that's not just about speaking. It's about revolutionizing how you connect, persuade, and win. Get ready to unleash the power of conversation with our guest, the one and only Jake Stahl of Jake Stahl Consulting. If you're ready to shatter the status quo and unleash the full potential of your conversations, then buckle up, because our guest today is a force to be reckoned with. Jake Stahl isn't just your run-of-the-mill expert. He's a pioneer in conversational dynamics, a master mason of connection, and a relentless seeker of the perfect dialogue. With his adaptive conversational blueprint, he's flipping the script on sales, transforming professionals into relational architects who build connections that last. Jake doesn't just talk the talk, he walks the walk with over 30 years of experience impacting over 10,000 individuals across six countries. He's not just a speaker, he's a communication powerhouse on a mission to unlock human potential. So grab your notepads and get ready to level up your conversational game. Welcome to the show, Jake.
Thank you, Kelly. And I think we could just end there. That was a great intro, and we'll just call it quits here.
I took it from all of the research and everything I've heard about you. Honestly, that is my impression. So I'm thrilled to have you on the show and to get to share your gift and your genius and ways for people to up their game. So tell me, how'd your journey start and how'd you become a pioneer in conversational dynamics?
I was raised in a day and age where kids were to be seen and not heard. And since my dad was a prominent businessman, I was really privy to just boatloads of backdoor conversations and front door conversations. And my dad was, God, the head of multiple organizations. So I truly benefited from all that growing up. But like any kid, I didn't realize I was benefiting back then. As a matter of fact, I hated it. So as time went on, I got into sales. And at one point, an organization I was with said, would you be willing to be a trainer? And I was like, sure, I'd like to be a trainer. The problem was I had no idea how to communicate what I could do to other people. I had been number one in three companies I worked with, and I sold them in the fourth company. I'm still a little bitter about not hitting number one there. But who knew how to get the point across and to tell people what I did? So it's really been a 30-year journey to unlock what the secret is. And I can tell you 30 years later, I'm still not sure what the answer is. I'm just a little bit more experienced at making mistakes.
Oh, I love that. Oh, that's perfect. More experienced in making mistakes. I might have to borrow that. That's pretty close.
Absolutely.
That's pretty honest. And I think a lot of people will resonate with that. I sure do. So what was the catalyst then for developing this adaptive conversational blueprint? I love your terms. They're gorgeous.
Yeah. It's going to sound a little silly, but the question, how are you, was the foundation for the blueprint. I was always amazed as a kid and over the years in sales, how are you was this non-conversation that started every conversation. Everybody's answer is identical. Everybody's question is varied, but largely identical. And it always amazed me how we didn't start off with actual conversation versus a question where not only didn't most people care about the answer or the response, but they also typically took it as a sign that they were talking to a salesperson. That's almost like the neon sign of I'm here to sell you something. But it went further than that. It's funny, even just recently, my wife and I were out shopping and I walked by another gentleman and we both nodded and I said, hey, and he turned and he said to me, fine, thanks, how are you? conversation never took place. So I think a lot of the adaptive conversational print came with my fascination with conditioning. Why are we so conditioned to give certain responses? And how far does that conditioning go? And that led me on the journey to create the blueprint that says, let's talk about perception first, then let's talk about conditioning. And then if we factor in the psychology and the neurolinguistic programming aspects of conversation, what happens? And so my goal, Kelly, when I teach people, is not to give them a script or tell them these are pat answers, is to say, okay, here's how you handle objections, but it's to teach them how to have a conversation again. How do we get by those triggers? How do we get by that conditioning and have something that really means something to both people? So that's what the blueprint is all about, is it's a structured way to get from A to Z without a sales script.
Oh, I'm completely fascinated by this. And just your mentioning, how are you? It's not a conversation starter. In fact, it's trying to back you off. It's to back you off from connection. People will say it. And right after that is, I don't really care. I just don't want to be the one to put out first. And I'm fascinated by conversation. This is something that is delicious. A great conversation is delicious. And it is to be just completely enjoyed. And yet we don't embrace it like we should. And so I'm just thrilled at the work that you do. This is just, will be a game changer for people.
I think I have the equal fascination that you do. One of my bylines, and actually a podcast I'm starting, is called In Search of the Perfect Conversation. So what does a perfect conversation look like? And it's going to vary 100 times over. But to find the components of a conversation that makes it, in your term, delicious is really it's a quest. It's something we should all be looking to find.
Yeah, I think you need to start off with an intention. I can remember this. This is from my mother. I can remember this at 6 years old. My mother said to me, your job in life is to be interested and interesting. And she started with interested. And that's been my motto my whole life, is that I like getting to know people, what they think, why they think, what they do, you know, how it happened to them. And if you are willing to extend yourself to be interested in the other person's story, the connection, because when they've talked to you, they've invested in you. When they share what's going on, they've invested in you, right? So this is amazing. Now, I love, the next thing I wanted to ask you about is, what inspired you to specialize in revolutionizing sales through, I love this again, relational architecture. Anybody's got to stop and ask you. All right, I want to hear about that.
One of the things that led me to it, Kelly, was after teaching in 6 countries and 47 of the 50 states, one thing became abundantly clear. It's not about the content of a conversation. It's about the cadence. We always talk about what we want to talk about, and let me deliver it to you in this way, and let me spill as much as I can, hoping some of it will stick. But none of that matters until you have exactly what you were just talking about. You have that interest. You have that cadence of back and forth, getting to know the other person. And this may seem like something small, but very few salespeople and even public speakers do it. As public speakers, we get up on the stage and it's, let me tell you about me and my topic. But a lot of times we don't get that audience involved enough for them to understand you and show interest and be involved in the topic. I've seen a lot of times where as a trainer or as a speaker, we don't have an audience that's receptive and we walk away blaming the audience. But the reality is, we're the ones in front of the room. It's our job to establish that cadence. And once we do, and only then, is when the content matters.
So how do you do that? How do you, when you walk up on the stage, all eyes are on you, and whether, and you know that you're, hopefully you've commanded the room. However, there's this big responsibility now of, I have this talk that I've brought to the group. I've practiced it. Hopefully you're not winging it. And you're trying, you have a goal in mind of what you're trying to accomplish. Now talk to me about that. How do you see getting on the stage, assessing your audience, their energy and feeling, how to be able to move with that to bring them on your side. Because I think when anybody gets on the stage, there's an automatic authority transfer that they say, you got the stage, so you must have something important, or that you wouldn't have been given the stage. You have seconds to prove or disprove that, right? Minutes, maybe minutes. But how do you go about doing that, of assessing that energy and then essentially winning them over enough to now be able to move into being able to share what you have to say and why you decided to be up there, or why you were invited to be up there?
Great questions, Kelly. And there's really a boatload of answers to that, but let's just cover a few in particular. The first is, our job as speakers is to persuade the audience, right? It's to convince them that we're that person, and it's to get them involved with the topic. But before persuasion is persuasion, not my coined term, by the way, written by a great book who's a social psychologist. I'm coining his term. The persuasion takes place before the talk. What's happening before you walk out on stage? When I coach public speakers, one thing I hear a lot is, wow, when I walk on stage, I have to make a good first impression. No, your first impression should have started before the stage. If you have an audience of 100 people or 150, 200, you should be out there beforehand. Your introduction to them should not be when you walk on the stage and take the mic. There's no reason you can't be welcoming people when they come in, talking to them as they sit down, getting to get a vibe of the audience and who they are. And while that's happening, I've seen some great speakers have PowerPoint presentations or videos going of other talks they've done, and the audience is buying in. Remember, we have two key ways to persuade. One is first person, and I do that by making my way through the audience and talking to people as they come in. And you can't cover everybody, but you can cover a lot of people. And the second way is third party. So if I develop a video that shows third party people reacting to me and it's positive, it sets the stage. They should know a good piece about me before I take the mic and before I'm introduced. So that to me is part of the persuasion package.
Now, how do you do that in an online situation where you don't have that opportunity to meet anybody in advance? You're just going up. Let's say you're doing a summit and you're one of the 30 speakers that's going to be on the agenda. How do you bridge that gap when you don't have the opportunity to actually meet them in advance?
There's a couple of ways to think about this as well. So when people are advertising for you before you come onto the webinar, there's the ways to ask them to run the videos of you talking to prior audiences. There's ways to put out testimonials of people who have attended your webinars before. And depending on the way the webinar is structured, and I've been on a number, there are some where you can get involved in the chat beforehand. So people are on stage with somebody else, and that person is just leaving the speaking podium. There's nothing saying that you can't say to the people organizing the event, listen, give me 5 minutes before I start, or make sure there's a gap of 5 to 10 minutes between the last speaker and I, and get involved in the chat. Hey, Joe, I see you're from Detroit. Thanks for joining. Hey, Mary, it's great to see you on here. I saw you commented for the last speaker. Hope you enjoy mine. Because it's not only the person we're talking to that it affects, but the other person in the chat look and see, oh, wow, he's come out beforehand and started to show his hand. Mm. Again, Kelly, it's important to understand we don't have to affect everybody. We only need to affect a small group. And if we can get that small group in our favor right from the get-go, we're ahead of 95% of the public speakers out there.
That's such a good idea. And by doing that, it gives this perception that you're really part of this event. You might be one of the higher end speakers, or that someone who's in the group more substantially, because you're already commenting about the other speakers. Maybe they'll have that perception of you.
Yeah. And here's a really cool study I'd love to share with you in the audience. So they did a study on this. A social psychologist did it. And he looked at, if you had a speaker who was, let's say, a CEO of a Fortune 10 company, and they came out and they put a bunch of ums and ahs in their presentation, and came across as, let's say, less than marketable with their speaking skills. And then they took somebody who might be a local owner of a bookstore. No less important, but the title isn't as impressive. And that person gave a rock solid, no mistake speech. Guess who the audience liked more?
Tell me.
It was the bookstore owner. The reason was, and this was a huge study, they found that the title of the person and their notoriety did not matter near as much as their ability to connect with an audience and have a good speech. So what you are before you come on stage doesn't speak near as loud as your performance and your ability to connect.
Wow.
Scientifically proven.
That's fabulous information. That's good statistics. I might have to borrow that as well. I think that's very powerful.
Feel free.
My students, that's fantastic. So I assume then, with all of this information that you have been working on for so many years, thanks to Dad, would you say he was one of your inspirations? Who else are your mentors? Who else did you see that really stuck with you, that really made a difference in your path along the way?
I would say there were some executives, one in particular that stuck out to me, not only on their ability to address a room, but also just on the stance that they had. That would be Lee Iacocca. Some of the younger guests might not remember Lee, but he was a real powerhouse in his day as a speaker and as a chairman. And he didn't take much nonsense. He called it as he saw it. And he wasn't really into the fluff, but he knew how to affect an audience. And he knew, in my opinion, my lowly opinion, he knew what was right. Yes, I'd say Lee was one of the better speakers. And also for the younger folks, I thought Ronald Reagan delivered an incredible address and was very captivating. And I'll just tell you, this has nothing to do with political affiliation. I don't want to walk down that road, but Reagan was a great orator, and I think he gets very little credit for it.
I agree with you. I agree with you. When I think back, Ronald Reagan really, it didn't matter what side you were on, what party you were with, he affected you. Obama, for me, President Obama did the same thing. He always, it didn't matter whether you were Republican or Democrat, he made you feel hope. I loved that he was so incredibly articulate. And I never worried what he had to say. I always knew it was going to be amazing. And I was going to feel better after I heard him speak. That's really powerful. That's really powerful. So those were your mentors. And here you are now becoming other people's mentors. How about that? That's pretty exciting.
So it is exciting.
So what about your book? So then you decided that you'd be an author and you wrote Life Coach's Toolkit.
I co-authored that book with other authors around the world. There were 25 of us. And the book was all about communication and coaching, whether it was life coaching or communication coaching. And I was with a very brilliant cast of authors who, since they raised the water level, my boat floated too. And it was great. It was just put out 3 or 4 weeks ago. And the book did extremely well for its launch. But like I said, I was among a limited group, and my chapter, like we just talked about, was about the importance of cadence over content.
So now I've got to ask you specifically about the 210 rule of communication. Got to hear about it.
Sure. And this is exactly what the chapter was about. And this is something I do coaching with a lot of speakers on. And it's about keeping a person interactive in your conversation or during your talk. And the rule simply says this. Let's take a step back. The origin of the rule came from this fact. For every 10 minutes you talk or present, you generate approximately 2 minutes worth of questions with your audience, whether you're a trainer or a public speaker. If you have a 30-minute talk and it's to 100 people, you have approximately 10 minutes worth of questions over that group of people. So what that does, if you think about it, is when you're in a presentation and you have a question in the beginning, it eats at you, right? You're always sitting there thinking, yeah, but what if? And the ability to be able to eradicate those questions is the hallmark of a good speaker who makes sure the audience stays with them the whole time. Worst case scenario is you say, I leave Q&A for 10 minutes at the end. You're going to have a huge audience of people all with 20 minutes worth of questions, just dying to get their last hits in at the end, and they're going to leave disappointed. So Kelly, I flipped it on its head. I said, what if every 2 minutes you create an interaction with your audience? Maybe you put an interaction on a slide you have. Maybe you bring a poll up. Maybe you have them do an exercise, stand up, sit down, clap, snap, whatever you want them to do. But every 2 minutes, you get some sort of involvement with the audience. And at the end of every 10 minutes, you open the floor entirely. Wow, you know what, gang? We've covered a lot in the past 10 minutes. My guess is there's at least 4 or 5 questions laying out there. Hit me with them so the foundation moving forward is a solid one.
Wow.
When you do that, at the end of a talk, you find that there's less stress, less anxiety with the audience. They feel connected because they've gotten to talk to you. More importantly, they see you as a human. And that may be one of the biggest connecting points we can have with our audience. We're just like you. We may be good on one topic, but honestly, I'm exactly like you. I have questions and I want answers.
What about those fears speaker have sometimes of that question and answer period, because they're so afraid they'll be asked something that they don't know or they can't answer? What would you say to them?
I hear that question a lot. And my question back to them is, there's 2 possible scenarios. You're going to know the answer. You're not. What is so harmful about not knowing it? Hey, you know what, Kelly? That was a great question. And I don't have it off the top of my head. But if you see me after the talk and I get your email, I'll get you that answer. That extra connection point, because you didn't know something, you can't pay for that.
That's perfect. That's just a perfect answer. Now, let me ask you about the subject. This year seems to be the huge subject about storytelling, that everything is about storytelling. And you're the perfect person to ask about this. Is where does this fall in your scenario, and how important is it? How personal do you want to get when you're just meeting an audience to share with them who you are, what's transpired for you that's brought you to this day and this time and this message, and why it's important they hear about it from you? Where do you fall on that?
Here's my question back. Do you know what the oldest form of communication on the planet is?
Storytelling.
Yeah. Cave drawings.
Yeah.
Cave drawings. Even as far back before we couldn't communicate at all or speak to one another, that was what we used. And it was communicating in 2 ways, right? I was telling an audience and I was helping myself remember. 2 stories, 2 different recipients. So that goes to speak to why storytelling became so important. When you go to a museum and see pictures, what's the first thing people ask? Wow, what do you make of that? What do you get out of that picture? And you can have 5 people giving you 5 different stories. It's inherent. It's genetic. And if that's the case, what better way to communicate with an audience?
So go ahead.
Nope, please. Absolutely.
So how do you become a storyteller if you don't feel that you're a storyteller, or that's not a natural inclination for you, or you think, I know people have said to me, I don't have a story, but I had a great childhood. Nothing traumatic's happened to me. I would just be boring. It would just be boring if I talked about any of those things, because nothing cataclysmic has happened to me to make me highly relatable. What would you say to them?
First of all, I'd tell them, you just told me a story. You just did it. So your claim that you're not a storyteller is based on really nothing, because you just told me a great story. Your life is uneventful. It was uncataclysmic. So you're painting for me a picture of how you grew up. But I'm going to offer you a flip side to that coin. When you call somebody on the phone, anytime you call them, I'm going to bet money that you're telling a story. Guess what just happened to me at work today? Hey, I just met the right person. Dad wasn't really with it today. We're always telling a story. But what we do, Kelly, is we confuse our ability to tell a story with being a professional storyteller. And if we go and look at the word professional, it merely means you get paid for what you do. So the difference between a collegiate athlete and a professional athlete is a paycheck, not the ability. I argue that's the same thing for storytelling. You call people to tell a story. If you're a golfer and you buy a new driving wood, you buy it to tell a story. Nobody wants to drive 20 yards further and not tell somebody about it. Right? All marketing is
my husband. Yes, that is a big story at the end of the day. It's amazing. And I listen intently and have no idea about this.
You're so nice, Kelly, to listen in and intently, no less.
I do.
But I guess, Kelly, my argument is we're all storytellers. It's like when I hear somebody tell me I'm not a salesperson. Of course you are. You sell somebody on something every day of your life. It just may not be a product.
So now if they say I'm not a born salesman, you say you are for the things that matter to you, then are they in the wrong business, or can they be taught to be salesmen in a business that they don't know how to express it in a way that is exciting or engaging, et cetera? Is that something that can be taught, or do you feel maybe you need to find the thing that you're most excited about so you can share it naturally?
I think the answer to that, Kelly, lies in the answer of what's your motivation. If somebody has money as their motivation, my talk to them about whether they can be a salesperson or not is drastically different than a person who has a passion for a product and wants to learn. So a motivator to me is the answer to that question. I cannot make the blanket statement that every person can be taught to be a salesperson. But I can tell you that if somebody has a passion for a subject, they're going to be more willing to learn and adapt. If I talk to somebody who says, my goal is to make $200,000 this year, that's great. There's a million ways you can do that. But do you want to do it through selling? And if they want to do it through selling, then you need to talk about the products. Do people have the ability to be good salespeople? Yeah, depending on what the product is and what their passion is behind it.
That's a perfect answer. I love that.
Thank you.
I love that. The type of people that you are attracted to, the kind of, you work with speakers, authors, coaches, entrepreneurs, who's your target audience? Who do you love to work with most?
I hate to go back to the previous answer, but I just got asked this the other day by somebody else. My ideal person is the person who defines their success as being driven. If you want to just be better than you were yesterday, if you want to continue to upskill, I want to talk to you. But if you've got a goal that's absolutely unattainable and you think that talking to someone like me is going to help you get it tomorrow, we're not the right fit. No horse jockey will ever be an NFL linebacker. So we can always say, think hard enough and you'll get it. But Kelly, it's not the truth. Think rationally about an attainable goal and add passion to the ingredients. And yes, you will get there. But motivational talks, self-talks, hiring the right coach, it's not going to happen. And I think the biggest thing, Kelly, is when a coach tells a person you can be anything you want to, anybody you want to be, because you can't. You can be whoever you want to be within your own boundaries. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it really does. And it's finding that right fit in life.
It
finding
is.
That right fit in coach. You can have the greatest coach in the world, but he might not be the right coach for you. And then you can find someone, and same with a job. You could be great at selling something that you are so lit up about. And then I always felt like, I can't sell widgets. I don't care. I used to own an event company, and I have to tell you, I chose big events that would take a year to put on over doing birthday parties or corporate events, because it's the same theory. It's the same really amount of work. Yes, it's a little bit more, but it's more exciting. I wanted to do the exciting thing that had risk to it, that there was, there might be failure along the way. And I just loved beating the odds. So I would choose these crazy 3-day street festivals because it would take 8 months to put it together and tons of people because it was just exciting. But I couldn't get excited about the school carnival. Not as excited. Gotta go.
Listen to your passion, Kelly. Oh, your voice, your body posture. It's fantastic. I can tell that's where you love to be.
You're so much fun. This has been the most wonderful interview. So if I were to ask you to advise young aspiring entrepreneurs and speakers who really want to learn, or if I were to say to you, even going back, if you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what lesson would you want to impart on the audience? The one that you now know is ironclad with you, but you didn't know it back then. What would you share with them?
I would say people are interested in you and what you have to say if you're passionate about it. There's been a million studies done that show that if you've got the conviction and passion, it overrides your knowledge base. In other words, I'll give you a great example. There was a singer, and I can't remember her name, but she was also a dance choreographer. And she tells a story of the first time she went to do choreography for a big production. She said, I told them all this and I was passionate about that, but she said, I didn't know any of it. I was just going to dig in and learn it along the way and do it. And she did. So don't let perfection get in the way of progress. If you've got something to share and you're passionate about it, share it and be passionate about it. One of my favorite sayings is a lion never has to tell you they're a lion. You just know. The gazelle knows, the zookeeper knows, and they don't have to say it once. So go out and be that lion. Have your voice. Let the people come to your passion.
I love that advice. That is absolutely spectacular advice. This is such a perfect conversation for me. So of all the accomplishments you've had over the years, all the things you've done, the places you've been, the changes you've made, your exquisite grasp of the English language and how you've created all your own phraseology that just, it's delicious. Of all those accomplishments, tell me which one holds the most meaning for you currently?
I think probably it was branching out on my own. It was getting that nerve to step out and just be recognized on my own merits versus what I did in a corporation. It has unlocked a lot of things. They always tell the story of Cortez and the burning of the ships, that he convinced all his people to stay and fight because they had no way back. They burned their ships out of there. I would say burning my ships was probably the singularly most exciting and terrifying day in my life. And it's led to a lot of bright spots. It's led to a lot of dark alleys. But I've done it on my own. And the joy in helping others do it is immeasurable. The whole giving thing is the best thing in the world.
You can feel that off of you, Jake.
Thank you.
I'm just telling you, energetically speaking, there is such a feel to you. You can tell you would be an amazing coach and it would be such a good time to have the experience of being on a journey with you. I'm thrilled to have had you on the show. And I want to thank you for coming today and sharing your insights, your expertise, and your enthusiasm. This is just why I created the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, just for this. So it's just been a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor that you took the time out of your day to interview me and that we got to meet. I'm really thrilled. So thank you so much.
I feel like it's just the beginning. I can see more things coming up in the future because I'm excited about working with you. It's just fun. You know the people that you think, I've been waiting for you. Where have you been? Where have you been? If you're as intrigued as I am about mastering the art of conversation and unlocking the power of public speaking in such a unique way that Jake has shared with us today, I encourage you to dive deeper into Jake's world and visit his website at jakestahlconsulting.com. You'll find a wealth of information and resources, and it'll help you transform your approach to communication, including the Life Coaches Toolkit Volume 2, and more about the 210 Rule of Communication. I know I'm on it. I think this is really exciting. And one key takeaway from our conversation that really resonates today is that 210 rule. I think that's a really revolutionary approach, statistically proven, that challenges a lot of old perspectives on conversation. For me, it really underscores the importance of rhythm and cadence in forging meaningful connections. That will stay with me. I think if we master that principle, we really elevate our interactions. I will use the phrase I love to use with Jake, we'll become relational architects in our personal and our professional lives. So I want to thank you for being here. I want to thank all of our audience for tuning in today. Your support means so much to us. And I love your comments. So please feel free to reach out to me. I love it if you like or share and subscribe. It helps us really grow the show and give us more listeners. And for those of you that are ready to leap into the world of public speaking, but you aren't sure where to start, check out our sponsor, speakertunity.com, because they provide all the resources and tools and direct contacts that help you kickstart and expand your speaking career onto new platforms. They help you find the right stage, and you'll find me there. And if you're interested in becoming interviewed on the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, or you know someone that you think would be perfect to the show, let me know. I'm interested. I'd love to hear from you. And with that said, this is Kelly O'Hara signing off. Remember, the ability to master the power of public speaking lies within each and every one of us. So embrace your voice, be sure to bring your passion, and make every word count. Jake's been a perfect example of that. And I can't wait to share our next guest with you. This is the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, and I look forward to our next conversation. See you next time. I want to thank you for joining us on this episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight. We hope you enjoyed this deep dive once again into the remarkable stories and insights of our incredible guests. Their experiences and wisdom are not just meant to inspire you, but to provide you with actionable steps to take on your own path to success. Remember, you have a story to tell, and your voice has the power to transform your business and make lasting impact. If you found value in today's episode, be sure to subscribe to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an empowering conversation. We'd also appreciate it if you could leave us a review and share the show with your friends, colleagues, and your fellow visionaries. Until next time, keep speaking, keep growing, and keep reaching to make your difference. This is Kelly O'Hara, signing off from the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight.